This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Does anyone have like the one like extremist conservative in your family? They're like, you know, we had like during COVID, we lost them. They're like, rah! You know what I'm saying? It's always an uncle. He's at family reunion. He's like, John, come here. He's always whispering, John, get over here. John, come here. What? Did you get the vaccine? What? I heard it's laced with Hillary's blood. He's always whispering to you. He's always like in the outskirts of the family. He's not like involved in the. He's like, John, come here. What are we doing, Uncle Randy? Get over here. Why are we behind the bushes? Get over here. Cheer about the conspiracy. What now? Think about it. Jill Biden's shoe size. 6. Barack Obama's dog, age 6. CNN spelled twice. 666.
Okay, let's just.
John Crist, how you doing, man?
What's going on, brother? That was posted. Props to your team. That was probably posted like an hour ago.
We move fast over here. I have a crack serious team over here. You know, it's funny because I was able to watch the clip, which I've obviously seen before, and I was able to watch you at the exact same time. You laughed once at your own stand-up, which it's hard. Oh,
I didn't know you were watching me. Let's see. Yeah, I've seen it and told it a couple times. So yeah, I mean, that'd be funny me editing my videos. I'm just sitting and just cracking up at myself.
It's hard to watch yourself, right? Like in general as a comic, because you're always like, that pause could have been a little longer. I should have milked that laugh a bit more, this, that, the other thing.
Well, I mean, I'm watching that. We filmed that probably last year. I just put up the clip today, but I move so fast. And that's like, I look back at it, I go, gosh, I need to just calm down and just deliver. You know, a lot of sometimes there's the comedians just stand there and I feel like I'm more energetic. And I think it might be a sign of like, I sometimes look at it as a sign of like nervousness or insecurity. So thanks to his PTSD.
We're doing a little comedy therapy here. We'll talk about how fast you move on stage, the pauses, all that. Who were your main guys growing up, right? Like that's the number one comedian question.
Oh yeah. I mean, I grew up listening to Brian Regan and Tim Hawkins. And then in college, I got into Kings of Comedy, Cedric the Entertainer. And I always tell everybody the reason I started stand-up comedy is because I saw a Cat Williams special in 2008. And I jokingly, but not really, it changed my life.
So is that the moment you were just like, I'll be funny?
Yeah, that's like, it's like kind of a salvation story, but in comedy, you know, it's like, that's when I got saved. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm a little older than you. 1983. I was 7 years old. I saw Bill Cosby himself on HBO sitting in my parents' living room. I was buckled over laughing. I didn't even know what he was talking about. Really. Yep. I just thought everything about the movement. You talked about the movement. Mm-hmm. He was sitting through most of it. I just thought nothing could possibly be funnier. And why wouldn't you want to make people laugh for a living?
That's pretty much the exact same feeling. And a lot of people, obviously, I've gone into it professionally, so a lot of people haven't. But everybody, if you ask anybody's favorite music, movie, stand-up, it is from that like 12 to 14. Like you were old enough to like realize things. Like Free Willy's like my favorite movie ever. I was so, it's a joke, but I was so mesmerized by this movie. I was just old enough to go to my buddy's house and his parents let us watch it. And this trying to save this whale, it's silly now, but I mean, there's no feeling that could ever, no movie now, I'm 39, could ever get me like that.
I forget. At the end of Free Willy, the whale falls on him as he's jumping over him, right? That's how it ends?
I think that's a Daniel Tosh remake. He saves him, dude.
Oh, he saves the guy. Right. Sorry. He saves the whale.
He runs to the end of the levee. Oh, everybody's thinking it in their minds because they all know.
Where did you start doing stand-up?
Man, I started in Atlanta, Georgia. I grew up in Lilburn, Georgia, which is about an hour north. My dad is a Pentecostal preacher, and he's now the mayor of the city. Actually,
oh wow!
Which is we have plenty of chuckles at that. But I drove about an hour down into Atlanta to the comedy club, and I did it for the first time, and it obviously went horrible. As I'm sure your first show did, or your first appearance on anything was terrible.
That's pretty much how it works. Yeah.
Do you think they told me if you do something for the first time, you're terrible at it, and you immediately want to do it again, that's a sign that that's probably what you're made to do. You feel that?
If you are stupid enough to do it again. No, honestly, the first time I did stand-up, believe it, I freaking crushed it, almost because you don't know how to make a mistake. But then after that, then you start getting in your head and thinking about it, and then you go through all the lean stuff and all that.
Like, yeah, when somebody says, like if you got in a car wreck this afternoon, right, and you get home, and you get to the office and you're going to tell a buddy or a coworker about it. You don't rehearse it.
Right.
You just tell it. You go, just tell them what happened. And if you tell the story to your wife, your parents, then the story kind of gets, you kind of know where the emotional parts are, and you maybe drum up the emotion or say they were going so fast. You just tell the story. And that's what comics, if it's, they're like, do you hype yourself up? Do you, you know, drink, do you smoke before the show? I go, nah, dude, you gotta talk to that crowd no matter how big it is, just like we're talking to each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise,
it really, it's that connection.
You have to get your heart rate down, actually, not like a football game. You try to hype yourself up, get psyched, and you can't do that in comedy.
What was the Atlanta scene like? I mean, everyone knows about kind of New York stand-up scene, Boston scene, Chicago, LA, yeah, but you don't hear too much about Atlanta.
Well, it's a very, I would say, very, very progressive city. A lot of the cities that we perform in, it's funny, like Portland, Wilmington, let's say Asheville, North Carolina, even Atlanta, are blue cities surrounded by all red, which makes for the best comedy.
Yeah.
People always ask, like, is Portland tough? I go, no, dude.
They need you.
Oh, dude, they feel so like oppressed that you just come in and say something and they think you like hung the moon. It's doing stand up, honestly, through the pandemic.
Yeah.
And everything that's happened in the last couple of years has been, people say like with free speech, it's like tough to be a comic, or like must be tough because everybody's offended at everything. I go, dude, it's the opposite. It's so easy to cross the line now. All you have to do is say like, I think there's only two genders, and that's like inflammatory now. So the line you have to cross to make something funny is very, very, very tight. And it makes comedy, I think, a lot easier.
Do you think there's like another layer to it now, which I've noticed when I do, and I don't do like stand up in clubs that often anymore, but I do book tours and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But I'm, in essence, I'm doing stand up. And what I've noticed is my audience, that obviously leans conservative, like your audience probably somewhat leans conservative, that they're so happy to be out and about, kind of like what you're talking about. And they're ready to be, they don't get offended, but if you offended them, they'd be freaking thrilled, right?
Oh,
like
they'd
actually be thrilled.
Oh yeah. Cause I say at the show, I go, all this show is, it's very simple. There's, you know, 5,000 people in there. I go, all this show is just the group text with your buddies out loud. That's all it is.
Yeah,
and it's so, every comedian I know, all from Nashville, or especially Theo Vaughn, Nate Bargatze, Leanne Morgan, just everybody's show. I mean, that we can't add enough shows. It's everybody's sold out, because this is the only time, at least since I've been alive, where my neighbor, your neighbor, can get fired for him saying something on his socials. So like, if your neighbor, someone in your community, feels a certain way about a myriad of topics, if he posts that, somebody could see it, that I don't want to do business with them, I feel uncomfortable with it, and he can get either brought in, reprimanded, silenced, or fired. And that goes for, by the way, everybody. So honesty or truth or transparency has gone kind of underground a little bit, where you go, nah. And then you kind of, that's all the show is just saying those things out loud.
So what year did you start doing stand-up?
2009.
So when the woke thing was really kind of blowing up, closer to, I guess, 15, 16, yep. And now into these last couple of years, could you see the way it was killing comedy in general?
I think at the beginning it did. And now everybody's like offended at everything and hurt by everything, and everybody wants to cancel everybody. It becomes, comedy always really was kind of like an outlaw art form. That's what it was. Either like back in the court jester days, if you want to go all the way back in history, the king would be like, look at this beautiful kingdom. Everyone's happy. Everyone's flourishing. Everyone's profitable. And the people would be like, what? And like they look around the kingdom and they'd be like, and the court jester, they would give him 30 minutes to come up and be like, the king says everybody's prospering, but look at the people from so-and-so village. Just to keep everybody honest. That was his job. And whether it's in American culture, Republican, Democrat, conservative, Christian, every subculture has a meme account. That's basically keeping nurses, accountants, people from Nashville, any group you're a part of, there's a meme account making fun of your group. Even your family, everyone has one in their own family. That's kind of what that joke is about.
Right, exactly. So you have that. Is your uncle actually Randy?
No, he's not Randy. Well, that's a combination of a couple uncles, yeah.
Okay. You mentioned, so Atlanta, obviously a progressive city, but your family, like, were you always kind of, I don't mean to make it right, left, conservative, liberal, but like, you know, we're kind of like-minded travelers ideologically, oh, yeah. I think. Was that kind of always where you were at?
We grew up like very, I was homeschooled and Christian and Pentecostal. So all those things kind of, I mean, it wasn't so divisive as it is now when I was growing up, but all those, a lot of very like my parents had a lot of fear of like public schooling that we were going to learn. I mean, I joke about it now, evolution or the Big Bang Theory or sexual education that didn't line up with the Bible. Things like that. I was only allowed once I turned 16. I of course live in a small town where there's a bunch of fast food restaurants. I was only permitted to be employed at Chick-fil-A. So
that sounds pretty good to me. They're all clean. Yeah. Everybody's friendly.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's nice. I mean, we had like a lot of. I mean, I don't know if it's a conservative ideal, I guess, but a lot, everybody had a job working. There's no, you know, if you wanted to save a couple $1,000 and buy a car, you had to do it on your own. And I think that kind of lends itself. I was talking to my CPA actually last week and I go, dude, why we got to pay taxes? And I go, how come everybody's not a Republican? Like, yeah, I go, not even like, I go, the size of the, I mean, you own your own business. So do I. The size of these, not to brag, but these, I go, how are people okay with?
Yeah.
And that's, if that's not Republican, maybe a little bit more conservative, an ideal small government. But my CPA said everybody that started with nothing and gained is Republican. If you kind of always had it and it was passed down in your family, then that's different. But anyone that's, when you probably grew up like me, $20 is $20.
Yeah.
I don't know how you grew up, but yeah, we're cutting grass.
You know, we were definitely middle class, but like I had jobs growing up. I was doing the paper route and I had to earn money to get my stuff.
Dude, that is old, bro. Paper route.
I'm 47. You're a kid, man. You're a kid.
We're close, the same age, yeah.
When you were doing stand-up at the beginning, were people bringing cell phones into the clubs? Because when I started in, I graduated college in 98. So my first stand-up gig, New York Comedy Club in New York City, May of 98. Cell phones, I don't even think people had cell phones. The iPhone didn't exist, but no. Cell phones really changed comedy.
Yeah, I work. Everybody has like a quote like home club. I live in Nashville. I go to Zany's, and yep. they have these things are called Yonder bags, where they put your phone in them, and then they there's magnetic, and everybody's phone's locked up. And it's twofold, really. One, comics, if you're going out on Monday at an open mic night and trying a brand new bit, right? And that's what everybody loves about stand-up, trying something new. And it could come across as, if you haven't gotten the words right or the tone or maybe the angle, sometimes you do a joke that sounds a little too harsh, lighten it up, or it sounds a little too loose, maybe come... that joke that you saw at the beginning of this is from my Netflix special.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go out tomorrow for the first time ever doing a joke, it's not, and you don't want that surfacing on YouTube. So that's the first way. And then the second is just for attention span. If you go into a Drake concert, you can kind of enjoy it peripherally and be on your phone. At a comedy show, we need everybody kind of locked in. So it does, we have a no phone policy at all of our shows. Obviously, we're not going to kick somebody out if they pull one out, but it makes the show better.
You like hecklers, or do you not like hecklers? I always find that to be an interesting dividing line with comics.
Yeah, I mean, it's
they don't really allow them that much anymore. I mean, in the back in the day, that was like part of the thing. You were going to get heckled. It's kind of how it was.
Well, you think about like a comedian like Jim Gaffigan or Jerry Seinfeld or somebody that you've paid $70, $80 upwards of $100 to go see. Those guys are not getting heckled just because, but like if you go to open mic night and somebody like you, do you have to bark on the street to sell tickets?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I spent a lot of hours out there.
Some tourist that's just walking around. He's like, you want to come to a comedy show? He has no emotional investment. So if you have less invested in the show, you do tend to heckle more. And then, unfortunately, and it doesn't really happen in my shows, but you see so many videos going viral, like a guy like Matt Rife or something like that, where there is a lot of yelling out. So if you go to the show and that's all the videos you've seen, you think these people aren't malicious. They just think that's how it goes. You yell stuff out to Usher or Harry Styles. You yell stuff out at a comedy show, but I mean, I don't see it much at my shows, but I don't mind it because these people are generally trying to be funny or help the show, not trying to be insensitive or mean.
Right. Is your goal like you want to be a legendary comedian, like known as just a legendary stand-up when you're 85? Or, you know, they don't really make sitcoms anymore, but people used to want sitcoms or freaking game show host or whatever.
Yep.
Like, is that like the North Star for you?
What if I... told my dad at 10 years, I want to be a game show host. Yeah,
I knew one comic who always said his goal was to be a game. This guy, Eric something in New York, he always wanted to be a game show host. And I thought it was the weirdest thing ever. Like that's what you're supposed to fall into. You don't want to do it, you know?
That's a default after things don't work out.
Right, exactly.
I always told like my kind of at the beginning, I have things in here on my heart and in my head that I would like to get out. Right. I'd like to, in a comedic way, influence the culture. Really the same thing that you're doing. And my dad, actually, he was a pastor for 30 years and now he's the mayor of the city. And we talked one time. He goes, John, you know, we're in essence doing the same thing. He goes, we all look at and me and you, we look at the culture.
Yeah.
We don't like it. Or there's a lot of it we do like, but we see things and we don't like the direction things are headed. And there's a lot of voices and I would like to contribute mine to fix or restore or make things. So like my dad said, he was doing it for 30 years as a pastor, trying to change people's hearts, right? Then he became a politician and was trying to change things by legislation and laws. And he said, and we as a comedian, I look at the same things, don't like them. And I try to influence them by humor. And I think in terms of a game show or a sitcom or whatever, we have probably 8 million followers on social media. And my agent was like, dude, if you go from, I mean, I'll put out a video, that video I put out today will get 10 million views. So he goes, what are you going to do? Go on Comedy Central on Thursday night? Nobody's going to see that. Even the late shows, and we love them all, and I'm grateful for their position in the comedy world, but don't, like, nobody watches them.
Yeah.
So going
for the record,
from my,
for the record, I'm not accepting myself in that we. They're fucking horrible. But
yeah.
But yeah, you meant we, the comedy community that wants to get on television.
Oh, no. Or like we.
I was grateful for him. Johnny Carson. Yeah. Grateful for Johnny Carson, but not grateful for these guys. Like, come on.
No. And so you go. If you have this size of a social media platform and you the same, to go backwards into like cable television would be, it would be like going backwards. My goal was to get the things in here and in here out to the most amount of people, continuing to build social platforms and then tour live would be the goal.
You mentioned the parts of the culture that you don't like. Can you tell everybody for the people that don't know the Netflix cancellation story that you went through?
Yeah.
'Cause I think it's pretty interesting in that, like, most people that get canceled unjustly, you came out the other side.
Yeah.
In a better position.
Yeah, so we had a I was touring a bunch in 2019, and we had a Netflix schedule plan for that was going to come out on Thanksgiving. We were also going to be on one of the late shows. I think it was James Corden, which that got canceled. My career surprisingly didn't take a big hit from losing to James Corden, but I was like drinking a bunch, and I would say behaving like a comic that was working at the comedy club you grew up in.
Yeah.
But I was also, I was working at a bunch of churches. So, I mean, I took all those gigs knowing that my personal life was not aligned with the values that those churches stood for. And they ended up making an article about me, about some relationships I had with women and drinking and things like that. And what's funny is, it was kind of like tabloid-ish type information, but we were so, if you look back at that time, it was very, people were like quitting their jobs like proactively.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Like people were like.
Well, that's why I think it's interesting, because you were right in the thick of that crazy 2-year
right
thing.
At the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And looking back at it now, I mean, obviously we would have probably just continued touring. And but we kind of put fuel on the fire by canceling our tour. So the headlines that ended up coming out was comedian cancels tour amidst allegations, which made us look, I mean, hindsight's 2020, obviously, but people don't remember about that time. It was, I think you've seen a lot of like with Johnny Depp and Dave Portnoy and the kicker for the Bills. And then the baseball player for the Indians that are like, people have said things about them and they're like, dude, these things are not true.
Yeah.
And people now kind of have a voice to be like, yeah, I made some poor choices, but here are the DMs or but back then in 2019, it was so scary. And it's not scary anymore to like, everybody's coming after everybody. And it kind of has diluted the whole movement.
You think there's also something weird about like comedians back in the day, everyone was like doing coke till their brains exploded. Like you expect artists to do weird stuff and experiment and have sex with a lot of people and all of that stuff. And suddenly we're asking our artists to behave like they're priests, basically.
Yeah.
And a lot of priests don't behave like they're priests.
Right. Yeah. Priest might be the wrong word. That's funny.
Yeah.
well, you look at you know, I was like just being a 35-year-old single comedian on the road. Now, I was working at church, and I understand that. But like, so they removed my Netflix special, and I would like to just, you would be like, all right, Netflix, what are the rules to be on your platform? Because there's people convicted in court of law of way worse things that my he said, she said. I heard from a friend of a friend that John was doing X, Y, and Z, which is like, all right. So like Kevin Spacey's still up there. All the guys that like did all those terrible things. Caitlyn Jenner, obviously pretty sure killed a person. But we just they kind
well,
of
well he or she had her
he or she,
her
yeah
reasons,
he or she you're right you know. Yeah, now I'm gonna be canceled for this. I said yeah. Yeah.
That's all right.
So it's kind of like well, what exactly are the rules? And that's why people get frustrated a lot with society is you go, oh, this I heard about this, and then it turns out not to be true, or some parts of it are true and some aren't. But it's like, well, it's too late. We're gone. But luckily, we can make jokes about it now because my career has obviously flourished bigger than it was before. So we're not.
You'll love this one. At the height of that, so this is probably right around the same time you're going through all of that, I tweeted out as a joke. It was completely as a joke that there was an episode of The Golden Girls from around 1988 where Betty White and Rue McClanahan, they're wearing face masks. So their faces are brown. And it happens to be that B. Arthur's son is marrying a black woman. So it's this whole episode about a black woman, woman and a white boy getting married. And and it's all about families coming together and no one's racist at the end. But there's this one scene for about 30 seconds with Betty White and Rue McClanahan. They're not in blackface. They're just wearing face masks. As a joke, I took a screenshot of it and I said, I can't wait till they cancel Betty White. And I freaking love Betty White. And literally like a week later, Hulu took that episode out of the catalog. I think it I think it just got added back in like in the last 2 or 3 months. Isn't that insane?
That's Betty White. I'm not surprised by that story in the least.
Yeah.
Not in the least, because it does feel good to, that's why the tabloids exist, right? To, if you think David Rubin or John Crist or LeBron James or whoever is up there.
Yeah.
Not to compare us to them, obviously.
No. We're definitely up there with LeBron James. That was good.
Athletically, at least. But so if you're here, somebody else is here, it does feel good to notch them down a little bit.
My guys know that I scored 3 points in my over 35 basketball league that I'm playing in every week. I scored three
Jake
points
make,
this week.
Baby.
I hit 1-3. Oh, it's sad. Oh, yeah. It's sad. What's next, man? What's next?
Now we are headed out. We have the third leg of, we're going out this weekend to Phoenix. We got 4 shows there. What we do in every city is we add one, and if they keep selling, we just keep adding them. So we did Saturday. We sold that out. We added Friday. We sold that out. We added Sunday. We sold that out. We added a matinee show. So we'll be there all weekend. We're taking off for the rest for the holiday, and then we're kicking back January, I want to say 17th, and we're going to about 50 cities across the U.S. and Canada.
You making it to Miami?
Let me think if we're making it down there. I know we've come down there a bunch before. We came down to the Improv. You ever been there?
Yeah, I've done the Improv. I sold it out. You know, I'm doing okay.
Why don't we do something together?
I could just sit there and heckle, or I guess I could open for you. You know?
No, we could do like you could do some time, I could do some time, and then we could sit on some chairs and do a Q&A.
We could arm wrestle.
There you go. Who wouldn't pay for that?
Let's do it. All right, we're going to link to all your stuff down below. And you want to like send them anywhere? Can we send them anywhere specific?
Let's see. John B. Crist on all social media or johncristcomedy.com.
That's excellent branding, and that's pretty much 90% of it.
Boom.
Miami it is. Thanks, man.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. Don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. If you're looking for early and exclusive content, you can join me on Locals at rubinreport.locals.com.